Hi folks, I'm happy to be here to share with you the results of a study that's been a few years coming. Hopefully these results will be as interesting, as meaningful to you as they have been to myself and my collaborators listed up here during our discussions over the last several years. So the preach to the choir part, I'll get that out of the way first. Forest soil carbon is an important pool. Two-thirds of forest carbon is stored in soil on a global basis. The fact that inputs due to litter fall and detritus production are closely matched by respiratory losses means that a small proportional change in either one of those two very large fluxes can mean the difference between a forest soil that's accumulating carbon and one that is losing carbon. We know from all sorts of primary investigations of forest soil carbon storage that there's a variety of factors that can affect whether soils are accumulating or losing carbon. Among these are climate change, succession and species replacement, and also different management alternatives that might be employed in forests. Why soil carbon is important, I don't have to tell you, but I guess I will anyway. Forest productivity is maintained by the organic matter stocks that house soil carbon and important nutrients for plant growth. Water and nutrient retention is related to soil carbon storage, greenhouse gas mitigation, of course, and the effects on climate change that the maintenance of soil carbon stocks. So we know that management can affect soil carbon storage through effects on any number of parameters, including the litter fall and inputs, quantity and quality thereof to soil, the mere presence of heavy machinery that is involved in forest products removal from stands can change the bulk density through compaction. Soil temperature might increase as forest canopies are open up. Soil moisture can change due to shifts in evapotranspiration that occur following timber harvests. All these things affect soil carbon storage, but oftentimes when individual studies attempt to quantify that change, it's difficult or impossible to quantify the direction or magnitude of change in soil carbon storage. As we all know, there is substantial spatial variability and even apparent temporal variability sometimes involved in quantifying soil carbon stocks in forests. And this makes it difficult within any one study to find a strong pattern as to whether forest harvesting increases, decreases, or has no effect on soil carbon storage. Well, there's a few approaches that can be taken to determine what the overall effect in a big picture of harvesting on soil carbon storage is. There are subjective literature reviews that have their place, particularly when the person doing the reviewing has a long-standing knowledge of that literature. That's not the case for me, but fortunately there are quantitative tools like meta-analysis that can be used to actually put a number on how soil carbon storage changes with an intervention such as management, forest harvesting. The most recent quantitative synthesis of forest harvest effects on soil carbon storage was 8 years ago. That was something that Dale Johnson and my former PhD advisor Peter Curtis did. What I'm presenting today is an update to that. We've expanded the data set involved in asking questions about how management affects soil carbon storage. We have one manuscript published in Geoderma about management in terms of nitrogen inputs. This is the forest harvest, and soon we'll be coming out with a fire effects on soil carbon and nitrogen storage. So in the 8 years since the Johnson and Curtis meta-analysis came out, there have been a lot of primary investigations of soil carbon storage, so many that we had to restrict the scope of our questions. The Johnson and Curtis 2001 paper looked at forests across the globe. We made a temperate forest cutoff. We used the definition from the 1930s by a German fellow named Koppen that cited temperate forests being those with 4 to 8 months of mean air temperature greater than 10 Celsius. So practically all of the sites that we included in this analysis were temperate. I will, in a couple of slides, describe those which did not fit that requirement. We asked a few questions of this database that we compiled from temperate forests around the world. One is, what is the overall general effect of harvesting and removal of biomass for forest products on soil carbon storage? The second question we wanted to know is, underneath this overall effect, if there was one, what are the most important parameters that one must measure in order to understand variation in the response of soil carbon storage to forest harvesting? And finally, from sort of an applied perspective, if we look at management practices that are commonly employed in forest harvesting, do different management decisions have unique impacts on soil carbon storage? As I mentioned, we use meta-analysis to perform this research. It's a quantitative synthesis of many individual studies of the same experimental intervention. It's used widely in medicine and increasingly in ecological sciences. Meta-analysis takes data from all these individual studies and calculates a unitless effect size, the change in some parameter, in this case soil carbon, due to that experimental treatment. So for every paper, in order to be included in our metadatabase, a paper had to include both a mean value for the harvested soil carbon, that's a concentration or a pool size, and then also a mean value for the unharvested state. The papers we included in this assessment include all manner of forest harvests. Some of these were frequent harvest, short rotation pine plantations with 30 years between cuttings, so the control condition may have been a 30-year-old stand, and then the treatment was a just harvested stand. And then at the other end of the spectrum, we had some chronosequences, especially those from New England, that look at much longer-term patterns of soil carbon change after harvests. From each paper, we extracted response data. Those are the response ratios, or the average effect sizes, the proportional change in soil carbon. And then the metadata. These are spotty. Some papers have report very little metadata for which we can categorize things like climatic factors, and even the depth of soil sampling was sometimes not clear. Metadata are the predictor variables that we can test using meta-analysis, that we can explore using the meta-analysis statistical methods. We can do a couple things. The first is calculate the overall average effect size of our experimental treatment, forest harvesting, on soil carbon. And then we can also look at individual groups within that overall effect. Within the overall distribution of soil carbon responses, we can identify discrete groups based upon their between group and within group variation or heterogeneity. It's much like ANOVA in that regard, looking at ratios of between to within group variance to determine statistical significance. In order to do a meta-analysis, you have to do a lot of literature searching and comb through papers that are returned by literature search databases. I did this dirty work using Boolean keyword searches, the advanced search functions of ISI, BIOSIS, CabDirect, and Agricola. It took a couple years, but I looked through over 6,500 references and in the end found 75 of them with control and treatment soil carbon values. Well, hey, you got to pay the bills somehow, right? The preferable way to do a meta-analysis is called a weighted meta-analysis. That's when every publication reports some sample size and an estimate of the variance associated with the mean. Then you can do a more of a parametric approach, and you can weight studies according to how well-constrained their average effect sizes are. It's still the case, even in this century, that a lot of papers don't report at least their sample sizes, if not also their variances. So we had to use an unweighted meta-analysis. This seems to still be the norm in the ecological sciences, is unweighted meta-analysis. This assigns equal weight to every individual response ratio in the database because there's no way to know which have associated with them more precise estimates of the true effect size for that study. We had 432 response ratios from these 75 publications. I'll use the term soil carbon here because this encompasses both concentrations and pool sizes. We took pool sizes as the response parameter of choice when possible and calculated them if a concentration and a bulk density was reported. But ultimately, we were concerned with whether or not the units of measurement and reporting had any bearing on the estimated effect of harvest on soil carbon. The exceptions to our temperate forest requirement were on the southeast coastal plain. Some of the sites in the southeast U.S. don't actually fit our definition or Koppen's definition of temperate climate, But this area is very important for forestry in the U.S. and even in the world, so we deemed it appropriate. That and Eric Vance is from there, so it's important to keep collaborators happy. All right, so the overall answer is yes, harvesting does have an effect on soil carbon. In general, we can say that harvesting biomass for forest products reduces soil carbon by about 8%. But when we do a meta-analysis in the overall database, looking across all of these soil layers, which I'll discuss individually in a moment, we find that soil carbon concentration, on average, did not change, that the soil carbon reduction due to harvesting is, in fact, a reduction in carbon storage. That is about a 13% reduction on average. When we performed our variance partitioning exercises, our heterogeneity analyses, we found that the single most important variable for explaining why the effect sizes vary between studies and within studies, soil layer. And not surprisingly, forest floors and mineral soils are different beasts. What we found is that the only soil layer that actually was statistically different from the others was the forest floors. Surface mineral soils, which we categorized, these are soil cores that were anything less than 20 centimeters depth. Deep mineral soils were basically anything between 20 and 100 centimeters depth. And then there were a small number of whole soil profiles. Actually, that should say whole mineral soils, that lower row of data. In any case, forest floors were a statistically unique group of response ratios. All mineral soils shared a statistically similar response to harvest, which was, as you can see, no significant change in the pool sizes of carbon. These are the filled circles. Concentrations are shown here in open circles. And one of the first things I'd like to point out is, although it wasn't the most significant explanatory variable, reporting units matter a lot, at least in the forest floor and the deep mineral soil. You can't expect to measure soil carbon concentration and have it say anything about soil carbon storage, at least in terms of the response to harvest. So if soil carbon budgets are the item of interest, then measure pool sizes, or please at least report bulk densities so it's possible to calculate them. So let's drill down and look at some of these differences within individual soil layers. Forest floors, which were the only soil layer that showed a significant overall decline in carbon storage due to harvest. These are just carbon storage numbers now, no concentrations here. The average change in forest floor carbon storage was actually quite well constrained across all these studies. Europe, North America, even some from temperate forests of Asia and Australia. The average effect of a harvest is to reduce forest floor carbon storage by about 30%. Within forest floors, the most important variable that we found commonly reported in these papers, in terms of explaining why there is variation in response ratios, was the species composition, is the term I'll use, though it's not quite accurate, forest composition. In any case, forests that had some component of coniferous species had the loss of forest floor carbon was mitigated by the presence of those coniferous species. Hardwoods tended to lose significantly more forest floor carbon than coniferous and mixed forests. One of the logical explanations we've considered for this difference is that of residue quality, higher C-to-N, higher lignin-to-N ratios of coniferous litters and detritus left on site after a harvest might mean that there is some less propensity for accelerated decomposition occurring in the altered microclimate of a harvested forest. If we move on to what I should say about this is an overall effect of forest floors. This includes harvests that happened 1 year before measurement and harvests that happened 200 years before measurement. So one thing we wanted to know is if it would be possible to temporally constrain the recovery time for this forest floor carbon. It appears that, at least for spodosols, it's possible to get a rough idea how long it takes to recover lost forest floor carbon after a harvest. We would estimate somewhere on the order of 50 to 70 years after this sharp initial decline and gradual recovery. Unfortunately, other soil types, other soil orders, alfasols and septosols and ultasols, shown over here, lack long-term or chronosequence studies, at least as far as we were able to find, and so we can't constrain a recovery time. Our expectation is that these other soil orders would recover their forest fluorocarbon more quickly, because forests growing on spodosols tend to be less productive than at least alphasols and ultasols, and maybe about as productive as inceptasols. That's what I'll say about that. Mineral soil carbon storage. I mentioned earlier that within mineral soil layers, there is no statistically significant differences between the surface, the deep, and the whole mineral soils. We should have some more discussion about that later. But apparently, if you measure any mineral soil in the general sense, you have done a good enough job of quantifying the management effect on carbon storage in the mineral soil. The thing that we found that was the best predictor of variation in soil carbon storage responses to harvest in mineral soils was soil order. If we look within, first I'll point out again that there's no overall change in mineral soil carbon storage across orders, but within individual soil orders, particularly inceptasols and ultasols, there is a significant general decline in mineral soil carbon storage following harvests. So within each of these soil orders, these four for which we had adequate data, the square at the top shows the overall effect. When that overall effect lies on the 0% change, this is scaled response ratio right here to a 0% change. This shows there's no change significant in spodosols or alphasols. The error bars, 95% confidence intervals, overlap 0% change. Within each of these soil orders, I present here the most significant predictor of variation in soil carbon storage responses to harvest. It's a poorly replicated situation here among alphasols, but there appears there may be a species effect. This is sort of similar to the pattern we observe for forest floors of all soil orders. Inceptasols show a short-lived decline in mineral soil carbon storage. In the 6 to 20-year time period, soil carbon that was lost within 5 years of a harvest is recovered. Spodosols show no significant overall change, but that is because a non-significant tendency towards increased surface mineral soil carbon storage masks actual decline in deep mineral soil carbon storage. And then the opposite pattern for ultasols, surface mineral soil carbon losses and no change for deep mineral soil carbon. So it's interesting, given what Cindy had discussed and the question from the audience about effects of soil order, probably to those of you who are true soil scientists, unlike myself, this may be more meaningful to you than it is to me, but I think it's quite interesting that soil order, that over time the morphogenetic factors that make different soil orders what they are tend to have apparently some impact on how more of a short-term management intervention affects soil carbon storage on those soil orders. One thing I'd like to consider in the context of these changes, 30% forest fluorocarbon loss sounds like a lot, but it's important to consider the relative magnitude of pool sizes of carbon in forest floors, shown here on the left, versus mineral soils here on the right. Spodosols tend to have relatively more of their carbon stored in forest floors compared to the other soil orders. So the loss of forest floor carbon on a spodosol is a bigger deal than perhaps on these other soil orders that have smaller forest floors. But in any case, looking at the x-axis values here, unharvested versus harvested carbon storage for these different soil orders, forest floors and mineral soils, generally there's a lot more carbon in mineral soils, we know this anyway, so the reduction in forest floor carbon probably mitigates the impact of that reduction. One thing I mentioned at the beginning of the presentation was we wanted to learn whether, to what degree different management practices affect the change in soil carbon storage. And what we found in our investigations of the factors that controlled variation in how soil carbon storage shifted after a harvest was that ecological factors like species composition for the forest floors, soil order, soil layer, and time were generally more significant determinants of how soil carbon changed with management than the management alternatives themselves. There were, in some cases, interesting trends, clear cut versus thin, saw log versus whole tree harvest, in terms of the effects of those different strategies, those different management practices on soil carbon storage. But we found that ecology seems to be a stronger control on how soils respond to management than the actual management strategies employed. I didn't go through the list of all the metadata that we included, but this is most of the list of things we were able to test with our database, were these different harvest practices, certain ecological factors, and some climatic data. In closing, I'd like to reiterate that the general effect of forest harvesting is to reduce soil carbon. That's driven mostly by a decrease in pool size that averages about 13% across temperate forests of the globe. These significant differences within this overall data set are due to soil layer. Forest floors lose significant amounts of carbon, about 30% on average, while mineral soils show no overall trend. Some mineral soil orders are prone to soil carbon losses. Forest floor carbon storage, it changes in response to species composition and time since harvest. And the list of factors controlling how mineral soils change in response to harvest is a little bit more complicated. So conclusions and acknowledgments. Folks that have worked on other soil carbon projects that Rich Birdsey was involved with. This research was supported by a grant from the Northern Research Station. And his name's not up here, but John Clark has helped me with some interpretation of these data as well. I'll take any questions that you have. Thanks. Okay, Lindsay.
I found that same problem in doing meta-analyses is people do not always report their true replication size or some measure of variance. And it's just amazing. So this is kind of a plea to write a paper. Make sure you include really detailed experimental design information and some error. That said, I'm just curious, of those 400 plus studies, how many actually had an N in standard? And where I'm going with that is it would be interesting, even on that subset, if it was enough to kind of rerun it as a weighted.
Yeah, it's been a while since I've looked at the database file itself, but my recollection is it's somewhere around half to two-thirds report error terms. Yeah. Dale.
I'm surprised that overall you got a decline in forest floor carbon. I'm not surprised the concentration was no factor because it's pretty close to 47-50%.
Yeah.
So most of those must have been pretty slicked off harvesting.
That's not the result that I found. There were definitely whole tree harvests. This was a mix of all different harvest types. My interpretation would be that the change in microclimate would be enough to maybe the reduction in litter fall inputs, but we have a lot of response ratios now that indicate a very cohesive and well-constrained reduction in forest floor carbon storage. An important thing I should mention, woody debris, often, as you probably know, not reported as a forest floor pool, so that's unquantified according to the method that we... They were frequently reported more complex soil taxonomic names. We took a coarser perspective due to the global scale of the analysis. There were whole soil order great groups, mollisols, andisols, for which we weren't even able to look within individual soil orders, let alone at any finer level of classification.
It would be interesting to look at that because you had a fairly significant body of soil salts.
Yes, definitely.
To see what kind of stratification might be within that.
Uh-huh.
You know, even if it's a smaller pool of data, to at least look to see if there's some clustering with tighter classification.
Yeah. Interesting. Helga.
Hooking up to that, an insecticidal is not an insecticidal is not an insecticidal.
The junk, yeah, right, the garbage bin.
Did you attempt at all to put the insecticidals with the groupings that it's likely to be later on? In other words, an insecticidal that is on its way to be a spodosol, an insecticidal that's on its way to be an altisol, an insecticidal that's on its way to be an alfasol, because I think they actually belong in those groupings and not as an individual.
Yeah. Ultimately, what this comes down to is my level of comfort with replication, sample sizes within groups. If I go with finer levels of classification like this, I rapidly wind up with response ratio groups of 10 or fewer, and I have no confidence that there are not confounding factors.
This would be lumping rather than spreading.
I see what you mean.
So to get rid of your insecticides and put them with the classes that they belong to.
That they belong to. All right. Can I have you review the manuscript?
Maybe it's...
Dale? The nitrogen was nitrogen amendment effects on soil carbon storage, C-N ratios, and mineral. We haven't, and at this point, we're not planning to actually publish those data. The fire manuscript will be carbon and nitrogen, but for this, we just focused on the carbon.